Oh, sorry, Ramona. I'm a little behind it here. I was looking at the ugly Anna, ugly Anna. I'm not sure which it is. Twitter handle. It's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, oh, I'm just you just go
Be
down
careful.
the followers. It's like, oh man. Go down the followers and
It's revealing.
look,
ESPN
Ryan, do I
Radio,
need to
presented by
educate you?
Progressive Insurance.
Go ahead.
Hold on one second.
Okay.
Guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Guests like Dave McManaman coming up in 15 minutes. Yeah, go ahead. I could always
All
use some
right.
education.
Let me educate you on how this goes. It's weird that I have to know this stuff, but the people that follow her in broad daylight, like when you click on the list of followers, I've noticed that since I've clicked on that list, at least three of the NBA players who did follow her have unfollowed her because it's sort of like, oh, wait a minute, we don't want everyone knowing our business. Look, NBA players have burner accounts. He doesn't need to be the player who follows her. It could be one of his friends, could be a burner account, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody who's trying to sneak a girl into the bubble should not do it in broad daylight. It's not that hard to connect dots between who follows her and who might be trying to invite her to the bubble. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. But it's I would say that if you're going to try something that illicit, you should be a bit more discreet. Use your burner
I
account.
just wonder, like, how hard is it going to be to get? Like, let's say there is an NBA player who really wants Ugly Anna to be in the NBA bubble. How hard is it going to be to get her in there? Because, I mean,
Really
you talk to
hard.
Malika, and like the credential checks are intense
Yeah.
in this place. She's been standing, like, Malika's been doing how many reports a day for the last, like, week or whatever it is, like 30?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
if she stood in the same place that she had been for this past week without her credential that says she's allowed to be there and is, like, COVID free and all that
Yeah.
stuff, she'd be in huge trouble. And
So,
all of these same people would have been staring at her for the last
yeah.
week. Nothing
Yeah.
else would be different. So if
Right.
you want
And
to get this woman in, what do you have to do?
I think you'd have to like smuggle her in somehow. I mean, you'd have to like meet up in the
Like in the back of the laundry truck or something, right?
Yeah, or you'd have to like go out to the woods or something, like where they have the fishing, they have to go out somewhere. I mean, it's a big property. I guess you'd have to like drive out where no one's following. Maybe like you're playing golf and you hit the ball into the rough and you sneak off into the woods or something. I don't know. I mean, it's really like I don't know how you're gonna
Oh
do
no.
this.
Oh my goodness. I've
What?
lost my golf ball. I'll be
Oh
back
yeah.
in a few minutes.
All that for a few minutes, huh?
Like, that's not worth it. It's not worth it to sneak that lady in.
No. And like here's the I mean Malika, this is one of the things that I was talking with her about is she used to do all these live shots, but if she's even standing where she's not supposed to be standing, they tell her to move. And part of the reason radio interviews are hard is that wherever she is, like normally you can do a radio interview anywhere. Like I've done a radio interview walking through the hallways at Staples Center while the game is going on. I mean, you just do it wherever.
Right.
But this place, like she has to kind of go back to her room because in order to do a radio interview, she needs to take her mask off. You can't really hear her as well when she's wearing the mask. And the only place you can take her mask off is in her room. Kind of a
Wow,
big deal.
that's amazing.
Yeah.
It occurred to me when I saw her first report that that was the first time I had seen a person deliver a TV hit. Particularly, indoors, outdoors, or whatever, wearing a
Right.
mask and gloves. Like,
And
I've seen a
gloves.
couple here and there, but usually when it's time to do the hit, because you're 6 feet away from someone, you're outside, whatever it might be, you take off your mask because, you're going on television and people need to be able to hear you and understand you. But no, I was like, wow, like this is, they are not, again, they are not messing around with what's going on here.
Yeah,
So,
security.
yeah, I am okay. So I asked this question. My brother and I were talking about baseball over the weekend and inching towards this restart. The every day we get our summer camp updates and all that. And it's a 60 game season. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of cool. 60 games, every game matters. You know, there's none of the sort of 2 month buildup where we try to pretend that everything's happening is super important, but all of these games matter. And it, you know, you're going to be paying attention to all of it. You're going to be invested in all of it. Now the circumstances are weird, but Ramon, if I asked you today to choose between 162, which most people think is too long, and 60, which most people think is too short, and you have to pick one or the other, and that's how baseball is going to be forever. Which one do you choose?
I would err closer to 60. I understand the traditionalists and that it's going to change all the records, but part of the reason why I think baseball has lagged as a sport, has fallen behind, you know, football, basketball, college football, like, is just because there's so many games that makes each game not meaningful. I mean, I do love that they play every day in a way, like there's a sort of rhythm to it. You get up in the morning, you go to the ballpark, you play every game.
Yeah, but you could still do that. Just do it for 65 days instead of
seven years. The sweet spot is probably somewhere around 100, 120. That sounds about right to me.
Right.
I think it's right in the middle of those. 162, it's so long. There's so many games. It's hard to care about each game because there's just another one tomorrow. You know, you get to like the 13th inning of a game that's tied and you're like, oh, our bullpen's going to be messed up for the rest of the week now because we played 13 innings. Right,
and it's also like if it's a June game between the Pirates and the Reds, it's like it's the 13th inning. It's like who cares who wins? Just somebody end this game because I want to go home. We got McManaman coming up in like 15 minutes, but 877-710-ESPN. This is one of those deals where, you know, Major League Baseball got all cocky about, we'll just make the season 60 games and that'll show everyone. And then I think there is a non-zero percent chance that fans look at what we see over the course of this 60 game season. Like, this is way better. Like it's more intense. Like what do we always say? The same stuff that makes baseball boring in July makes it amazing in October.
Right.
Well, this, like, you're almost basically just skipping straight to August and September. And, you know, it's a different game. There's no question. It'd be, you know, you have to throw out all the old records and, you know, your pitching staffs would probably be done differently. And all, like, strategies become different. But the point is, like, every game would be really important. And it's still baseball. Like, there's still, you know, you got to score more runs than the other team and you can hit home runs. You can do all that other stuff. It just matters more. Like, I think like 120 is too long. Like, 80? Is 80 okay? Could I do 80? I mean, but if I had to pick one or the other, I'd pick 60. And it's not even close. I don't have to think about it. Greg, what would you do? You actually, you know, are deeply invested in the history of baseball.
Yeah, I think there's just so many things. Like, having pitchers are the biggest thing that I think is the issue here, is that they have to change the way that they pitch. Like, they pitch once every 5 days, and it's a regimen for them. You know, like, Hyunjin Ryu was a guy that he wouldn't take bullpens. Like, he had a day every day in between starts.
Yeah.
He did something completely different. And so if you have a 60-game season, then you're cutting down how often you're actually going to get to see these star pitchers because they're not going to have as much time. You either have to bring them closer, which is different than what they're used to for their arms, or you only get to see them still only once every five games, and that cuts down how often you see Clayton Kershaw or how often.
But couldn't you teach the next Walker Buehler to be a guy who pitches 3 days a week, like for 3.5 innings or four innings? Well, you could see him more.
Yeah, but then you're starting – okay, fine. But then you're starting to see guys for only 3.5 innings opposed to seeing guys sometimes go into the 8th or 9th inning, you know, or it really changes the way that
sometimes
you play the entire game.
Oh, no question. But, I mean, Ramona, most pitchers now, even the best guys, are 6-inning guys. What really are we losing if they only become 4-inning guys and we see them once at one extra time a week?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're 6-inning guys because you're saving them through the whole entire season.
Right.
If you cut it down just slightly, which is fine. Like, let's say you cut it down to 140, 120 that Ramona was talking about, then maybe you can push them a little bit further. That pitch count doesn't make as much difference. In the 6th inning, when they're at 90 pitches, you're not like, oh, I got to take them out now because I don't want them to hit that 100 pitch mark.
Right.
If it's a shorter season, then you can go, all right, let's push them to like 110, 120.
I've always thought that baseball was a little too long just because the season really drags. when you're out of it, it's just hard to get people to care about that specific game. And you see that reflected in the attendance and how much each game matters. But there is something though about there being a game every day. Like I remember when I was pregnant with Daniel, I was pregnant mostly during the summer and like the third trimester where you really don't want to do anything or go anywhere. You just stay inside where it's air conditioned. It was so nice that there was a Dodger game on every night. It was like my thing that I look forward to every single night is like watching the Dodgers. And I think there's that rhythm that people who love baseball, like they can, that's the real hardcore fan, right? It's like they just love baseball. They can watch it every night. Each game is different. Each game is interesting. I don't know how well that's going to play with the modern era where people have so many entertainment choices every night. There's so many streaming shows. There's so many cool things to make and do and things like that. So I just, I think baseball will probably have to grow and evolve. And I think you're right, Brian. Like this is like cutting straight to the pennant race. This is just the 60 most meaningful games. Here we go.
Right. And I mean, you got to get used. There is no question. Like part of what makes baseball is the long sample size. And you really do get a chance for the best teams to rise to the top and this and that. Like like 60 makes it shorter than hockey, makes it shorter than basketball. Like that's really short. Like I get it. Mm-hmm. And it's probably too few. I think for, like you said, 100, 120. But if I had just, basically what you're saying in this question is I get all the good stuff. And then how much do I care about the stuff that baseball seems to care about, which is the long history and being able to compare the stats of the pitchers today to the stats of Walter Johnson 100 years ago and all that. And you know what? I don't care about any of that. I genuinely don't. And I think whether you want to break it down because, as Michael Thompson likes to point out, a gigantic population of people weren't allowed to play in the league for the first part of the major league, of baseball's history, to the fact that, the mound is higher now than it used to be, or lower now, or whichever one it is, lowered. And so all of these, there are little things that are different. Athletes are different now than they used to be. There's the DH where there wasn't before. There are 30 teams now instead of, 17 or whatever. It's all different enough that it's hard enough to go back and compare it. And I don't care anyway if Stan Musial is better than Ken Griffey or vice versa. I want to watch the games. I want to see who's good now, who's playing well now, and all that stuff. And this doesn't make me a baseball hater. I love baseball. I grew up with baseball. I grew up with baseball history. I own the Bill James Almanac and all that kind of stuff. I just, at this point, I want to see the best parts of every sport that I follow. And the best parts of every baseball season are the last 60 games in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So let's just start there. But what does baseball do if it turns out that people don't want to go back to 162 and they don't like it as much and it's not as popular? And the fan responds to what we see this year in terms of fewer games, faster pacing, get to the point, actually turns out to be what people want. What do they do?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have to stick with 162 going forward until they have new broadcast deals, et cetera. Cause there's just money that's tied up in this already. Like there's just local RSNs or regional sports networks. They calculate how much they pay based on 162 nights of games. They just do, plus spring training. And so there is a real debate to be had, but I think what'll happen is this year we'll have 60 games if we get through it. I'm still not convinced we get through that.
No.
of all the sports.
Although baseball is so far is testing quite well. Like their players are, in terms of what that is, they're doing very well, but they also haven't gone anywhere yet.
Right. They haven't gone anywhere. And baseball is the original socially distanced sport. So I think they have a shot at it, but this isn't exactly giving it to each other. I think it's more what happens when you go home and when you travel.
Marlins fans have been socially distancing for years.
But I think baseball, you did the 60, but like they're going to head into a labor agreement next year. As soon as this year's over, they have a new collective bargaining agreement to get through, which is going to be fairly awful, I think. Maybe even worse than this last agreement.
It probably will be, which is saying something. It probably will be.
Yeah, going to be awful. And look, they're gonna have to figure this out. Like, they're gonna, I think baseball, they've been doing a lot of things over the last few years to try to say, how can we make the game more fan friendly, et cetera. But I'm with you. I think that they do need to consider a shorter season just to make the games more meaningful.
It's gonna be. There's an assumption I think that baseball has that once, like, we'll get through this, and then, you know, people will be so excited when it comes back and it's intact next year, and it's going to be, you know, assuming the collective, and they're just going to welcome this thing back. I don't know if that's true, and I would make no assumptions. And I think it is a dangerous thing for the league to just assume that baseball fans are going to come back and accept the game in the same way that it was before. Dave McMenamin, he's at the bubble. We'll talk to him next. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Commercial insurance through the Progressive. I sound like my mother. Commercial insurance through Progressive protects your business and your dreams. Choose from over 30 coverage options at progressivecommercial.com. Joining us right now from the bubble, Dave McMenamin. ESPN's Dave McMenamin covers the NBA. How is now you are outside the bubble, but probably have to stay inside your own bubble to make sure you. How's this working, Dave?
So a little premature on my bubble location from you, Brian. I go down on Saturday, so I'll be in the outside bubble, tier two, they're calling it, or yellow zone from Saturday until late August. Then I'll swap into the main deal for the conference finals and finals.
I want you to know, Dave, you're always tier one to me. So don't let that status, like, so are you, would you rather be all the way inside, especially given like what Florida looks like right now and eventually what you might want to, you know, where you might want to be able to have access to? Would you rather be all the way in or in sort of outside where you still have some freedom of movement, but there's a lot more, theoretically, a lot more kind of infection out there?
I think I'd rather be all the way in. Now, I'm still thrilled about this opportunity, and you know, obviously take some personal responsibility from being down there in Tier 2. Like, it's still basically on me to operate the same way I would if I was in Tier 1, to not compromise my ability – not compromise my health, first of all, not compromise my ability to go and cover the games I'll be down there for anyway. But, I prefer to be inside, but I'll make it work this way as well.
Dave, is it, do you just like, describe for me what you can do in tier two? Like, you can be in Orlando. Do you have to be 6 feet away from the entrance to the bubble? Like, what does that actually mean?
I honestly, Ramon, I'm still kind of awaiting further instruction, but basically, from what I understand, the real access opportunity will be, I'll be in the gym for games. They're going to have, I think they have up to 12 tier two spots designated per gym, per game. You have to tell the NBA ahead of time, 24 to 48 hours, which games you plan on being at.
Okay.
So that they can, you know, assign the seating in that manner. And that's it. Now, you know, theoretically, you're supposed to have some priority in the Zoom access calls where, you know, if you are tier two, you know, you're going to have a better chance to ask a question in that time window than if you were just still in market and didn't make the trip there. But, you know, limited in terms of NBA granted access, but then, you know, being there always allows you to have the chance to have eyes and ears on your subject matter. And, you know, who knows, you know what it's like, Ramona, you know, broken stories off of talking to people on the fringe. You know, you get in a talk with someone at a hotel, at the hotel you're at, who knows someone at the hotel the players are at, and all of a sudden you have some information that you wouldn't have otherwise.
All of a sudden we're all deep into Ugly Anna's Twitter feed. talking to Dave McMenamin, covers the NBA for ESPN. All right, so the Lakers, They were without Avery Bradley before this all started. He opted not to go to Orlando. Now Rajon Rondo is out. He broke his hand 6 to 8 weeks. Theoretically gets him back somewhere around the second round of the playoffs, maybe. There was a lot of concern just about injuries and how that would impact even beyond coronavirus, both with the Lakers, with the Rondo injury, but then sort of larger issues around that, like, how much do you expect stuff like what happened to the Lakers and Rondo to ultimately be the thing that dictates who wins a title?
Well, first of all, I blame Steve Mason for having the Rondo hype machine rolling in full speed last week when I went on with Mason Ireland, and I actually fed into it a little bit, telling some reports I got from how Rondo looked good at the individual workouts in El Segundo. But, you know, I honestly don't think this materially changes their chance of winning a championship this year right now, but it lowers their margin for error. And you know, the reason why teams are allowed to have 17-man rosters down in Orlando is because the unprecedented challenge of potentially having COVID go through your roster. And if it's not COVID, it could be a broken thumb, or it could be a turned ankle. And, you know, LeBron James has adroitly taken over point guard duties for this team. His minutes will only go up in the postseason. So it's not like you're talking about, you know, a huge expanse of minutes per game. It could be only 15 minutes per game. And maybe Alex Caruso deserves those minutes, and KCP deserves those minutes, and it would be better suited to have them, you know, getting more playing time than Rondo anyway. But if somebody else goes out, now you're talking about you have less people you rely on and you trust on your bench. Now, Quinn Cook can hit open shots, plays well off the ball, has championship experience from Golden State. You could do much worse than having him as the guy who is going to be one step up in your rotation as a reserve. But still, we haven't even played a game yet. The Lakers have lost two players. That's not the best thing, the most encouraging thing you'd want, as we're still a couple weeks away from July 30th, and July 30th is a couple weeks away from the start of the playoffs.
Hey, Dave, what kind of shape is LeBron in? I mean, we've seen a few glimpses from practice, just, you know, videos and some pictures and stuff. But do you have a sense of, like, how well he's kept himself in shape this whole time?
Yeah, Ramon, I mean, just the conversations I've had, it has been LeBron has approached these last 4 months the way he kind of approaches his life year-round. I mean, the story I like to tell is when he rents a yacht off the southern coast of France, that yacht has a gym on it.
Oh, wow.
He's not just sipping rosé up on the top deck. He's going below deck and doing a full-fledged workout as if he was, you know, at his home in Brentwood in the offseason. So, to me, that's not as much a concern. One thing I think that was interesting is you've seen some of the things posted, I think, by Lakers social media or Clutch Sports social media. You've seen LeBron doing ball handling drills.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from talking to guys around the league for years, that seems to be the first thing to kind of go when you're not playing regularly. You know, you can get your wind back, you can get your shot rhythm back, but handles, because it's such like a full concentration, you're putting all your body into it, and a melding of body and mind, that the handles is something that kind of gets a little wonky. And that's why LeBron in years past, you'd see him the first month of the regular season, his turnovers per game would be much higher usually than his average turnovers per game in the months that followed. And so to me, you know, being in shape isn't necessarily an issue. I think, you know, he's going to try to fine-tune getting his handle back, getting his rhythm, his touch back, I should say, as these weeks continue.
So, Dave, Russell Westbrook announced today that he had tested positive and hasn't joined the Rockets and is quarantining and will join them later. Ramon and I were talking about this earlier. Like, how much do you think the athletes know or the teams know about the kind of how positive tests might linger? I mean, even after Russ is clear and is able to go play, how much of an impact having tested positive before might have on a guy like him?
I don't think, unless the teams are privy to so much more information than us and the general public are, which in some cases they are, but, you know, if you're an informed citizen, there's been, you know, reports out of the UK about potential mental side effects that this disease can have, and not the mental side effects of being isolated and being away from people, but actual like brainwave type stuff. And we don't know, in terms of long-term effect of your lung capacity, because it is such a cardiovascular disease in that sense. So I don't know. Whether the teams know it or not, I mean, if they had information that would suggest some long-term effect and were readily, putting their players through, it's okay if they follow protocol and are in quarantine for a couple of weeks, we'll be welcome to have them join our group. That would be pretty irresponsible. So I'd like to think they don't have a ton of information about the long-term effects.
Dave, what's this been like just as a reporter trying to cover a championship team? I mean, you've had a pretty blessed run in terms of championship teams that you've covered, or at least teams that go to the finals in your career. How does this rank, right? Just, this season.
Yeah,
I don't even know how to put it into context.
I think, all of us on this radio hit now, and many of our peers will say this is, the most bizarre NBA season they've ever had to cover. But I think for myself and, the colleagues that I have at, LA Times and Orange County Register and The Athletic, who have specifically been covering the Lakers on a day-to-day basis this season, from where we started in China to the tragedy in January, to not only them going through the pandemic, but, one of their players was a leader in the player coalition calls with Kyrie Irving, with Avery Bradley. You have the back and forth with Dwight Howard. Will he or will he not join the team? And, of course, him going through his own personal tragedy. And now you go day two of their camp down in Orlando when you thought the clouds were starting to separate and they lose their, playoff Rondo secret weapon. So it's been nonstop. Honestly, the season that it's reminded me the most that I've covered was the 2012-2013 Lakers.
Yeah.
Dwight Howard's first time around. But there has always been a resiliency to this team where that other team just didn't seem quite equipped. Even if, Kobe had not torn his Achilles against Golden State late that season, I don't think many of us covering the team thought they were going to continue that run all the way to a finals berth.
Right.
This Lakers team, there's ample evidence that they are very well suited to do that. And so I think that, kind of still being around that locker room, or I guess not in the locker room anymore for the rest of the season, but still being around those players and having conversations with them over, social media and texting, phone calls, stuff like that. The optimism remains, which I think, it makes it more enjoyable to cover, I think, because covering a hopeful group is more enjoyable than a dreadful group.
And certainly, I will say, the biggest contrast in terms of that season versus this one is the amount of joy in the locker room. And that was a joyless back in 2012, 2013. That was awful terms of happiness. This team has gone through an enormous amount of stuff, but the energy level, the enjoyment level, the amount that these guys actually like being around each other, it's night and day.
Yeah. I will never really forget. We had to be about halfway through the season. We all knew stuff was going wrong with that Lakers team, and Anton Jameson just kind of popped off. Okay. We are really in for something here with this team. But no, that moment's never happened with the Lakers. I mean, this team actually, they set out a goal not to lose back-to-back games all season long. It sounded absurd, and obviously they didn't accomplish it, but they went to late December before they did lose two in a row, and they had a four-game losing streak then, and I think they only had one other two-game losing streak all season. So that's a pretty lofty goal to put upon your shoulders, and they kind of walked the walk, and to have that, to be around that level of commitment, and be around a locker room full of, I think there's eight or nine guys over the age of 30. And, I'm not quite the young reporter I once was. So I tend to gravitate more to the guys over 30 now than I did to the guys in their 20s like I used to. It's been a really enjoyable group to cover.
Wait until you turn 40, Dave. There's no one left to talk to.
I know. I was laughing when you said that. I was like, I know.
it was me and Vince Carter. Once Dwayne Wade left. Once a year. That's all I got.
No, you know what happens after that, Dave? You talk to the coaches. That's what happens. Yep. You don't talk to the players anymore. You're too old.
Ushers, coaches.
Well, it was funny thinking about that 2012-2013 season because I remember Gary Vitti, the trainer for the Lakers that year. I think this was one of my all-time favorite quotes, and he goes, "You know, when you're banging your head against a wall, like if you're doing, you're just banging your head against the wall, it just feels good when you stop." That's how he described the end of that season. I was like, "Yep, yeah, that sounds about right."
That's about right. All right, Dave. That was Dave McMenamin giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromises. Thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate it. And get ready for that bubble.
Oh, yeah, I will. Thanks, guys.
Tell me what you want me to send you, Dave. I'll send the whatever Marriott you're at.
Okay, well, are we allowed to send you care packages? Can we do that?
I think so. I think we get mail. We get mail.
Okay. It'll be like camp. We'll send you like magazines and candy. It'll be fun. All right, David McMenamin. All right, done. Sold.
Airheads. I love it.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
It ain't game day, but you can still feast like it is. Meet Church's new $5 Campfire Smokehouse Chicken, our fan favorite with a new campfire flavor, plus mashed potatoes and a biscuit. Church's bringing that down-home flavor. Offer valid at participating locations. Ramona, good news. The thorough review of the football team in Washington, their nickname, is apparently done.
Yeah, thorough.
And they are officially going to change it. That came out this morning. One small complication in what they might change it to. Tell you what that is next. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, filling in for Sedano, 710 ESPN. All right. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, filling in for Sedano. My favorite part of this whole Washington football team name change was when they did the release last week where they said, "We've decided to undergo a thorough review of the issue of our name and all this." And like, what is there possibly to review to determine what, like, you've had? It's not like this is a new thing that somebody just put on your desk a week ago. I mean, this has been an issue for 30 years. And you know, the idea that the organization would, you know, then undertake a thorough review of what's coming and what they could do next kind of struck me as incredibly stupid. But today we learned that thorough review has decided the team is in fact going to have to change the name. I mean, there's no surprise here what the end result is.
Well, the advertisers started to pull their money. The sponsors pulled their money. I mean, it's not, I don't think this was like all of a sudden, you know, Daniel Snyder woke up and grew a conscience. Grew some moral high, you know, found, like all of a sudden he's been walking through the desert and then saw some moral high ground over there. I think that all, like, a significant amount of their sponsors pulled out, said, "We're not going to associate with your team until you change your name. If you're still known as the Redskins, it's an offensive name that should have been changed a long time ago." I think there's a lot of things in sports. Like, I don't think the tomahawk chop should be around anymore. I think that's offensive. The Indians, I think, is borderline. It's not quite a derogatory name.
Chief Wahoo,
but Chief Wahoo is
offensive.
Yeah,
right. But the team name.
Chiefs, that sounds good. You're the leader of a tribe. That's okay, I guess. But you know, the one thing that I've learned in covering this stuff is it's not whether I find it offensive; it's whether the group representative finds it offensive. So if you ask a Native American, "Do you find it offensive to be called the Redskins?" 100% of them will tell you yes. Like, that's an offensive name. So,
and here's the deal: like, even if it's like 65% or 50%, like, how many? Because this is something that people always would fall back on. Polling says that many Native Americans don't find it all offensive. I said, "Well, you know what? I'm offended by it." You know, I mean, but how many people need to be offended in a particular ethnic group before we decide that that crosses the threshold of a team needing to change its name. I mean, it's like, if it's a few of them, if it's 10 people, if it's whatever, it's like, because the name is so obviously racist, just change the thing. Like, what just we find it. Is sports will go on. Your team will go on. Your fans will still show up. People will still care.
The same color scheme, the same everything. Yes. You just change the name. Like, you could still be crimson and gold, whatever their official colors are. You could still have the same kind of, you know, the same kind of striping on the uniform, all that. Just change the name. Just don't have a picture of the Redskins. That's really offensive. It shouldn't be that hard. It should have been done a long time ago. And like, you know what? You know what happens when you change the name now? You don't get any credit for it.
No.
Because you didn't do it when you were supposed to do it, when you should have done it a long time ago. You did it when you finally got shamed into doing it by social media and when your advertisers decided to back away from you. So,
well, I saw a great tweet, I think it was over the weekend, where somebody asked a question like, you know, after all those years of activism and protests or whatever, who would have thought that it would have been money that eventually gets Daniel Snyder to change the name? And my answer to that, and everybody's answer on this thread, was literally everyone.
Yeah, like, literally everyone.
Like, there is not a single person on the planet who didn't think that it would be the only thing that would get Daniel Snyder to change the name is money. But they do have to change the name to something else. They can't just be the Washington Football Team forever.
Right.
And there are a lot of names that are out there. And I saw this from Will Brinson at CBS. One possible problem in picking a name change quickly and settling on something is that there is apparently a realtor in Alexandria, Virginia, who beat the Redskins to trademarking like 15 different team names. Oh, so the following have all been trademarked: the Washington Red Wolves, the Washington Tribe, the Washington Red Tails, the Washington Monuments, the Washington Veterans, the Washington Renegades Gridiron Football, the Washington Braves Professional Football Team, the Washington Red Tails, again, they did it twice just to be sure, the Washington Freedom Fighters, which I don't even know what that, like, that's a weird one.
Yeah.
The Washington War Hogs, this is my favorite, the Washington Radskins.
No.
Like, really? That's what we're going to do? Even Daniel Snyder wouldn't try to do that one.
No.
Look, guys, I changed the name. The Washington Red-Tailed Hawks and the Washington Potomacs. All of those have been registered by a realtor in Alexandria, Virginia. Does that actually, like, could that really complicate things in this process if somebody did that?
I think you can do that for a certain, I think you probably could do it. There's some law that says, you know, like, let's say there's a new company that comes out. I'm just going to make up this. I'm sure that TikTok has a website, okay? But let's say TikTok doesn't have a website. TikTok.com. Let's say it's not registered. Nobody has it. But it's a huge company that eventually will do a website. And somebody goes and registers their website. I think that is illegal if you basically take that website name for the sole purpose of exploiting it. For, you know, to get paid back for it later.
Because this is what happened in like the early days of the internet, where people would just buy up domain names that they thought people might need.
Yes. I think it's not illegal, but then I don't think you can profit off it. I think they basically will just, you can't really make that much money off it. Now, if you got lucky and you picked a name that was not an obvious name, and then 10 years later somebody wanted it, then you can make some money off of it. But, I don't think any of those are obvious names. So maybe that'll work. I don't think he can really, you know, hold, like, they'll just pay him whatever he wants. It's probably not going to be that much money, but I don't really like any of those names. The only one that I heard that made any sense was like the Red Tails. That was kind of cool.
Right. The Red Tails is an homage to the Tuskegee Airmen. So that's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. It would fit the same color scheme, et cetera. But like, I don't know. There's so many ways they can go with that name.
The Washington Monuments is terrible because you don't want
terrible.
Like monuments are things that don't move.
Yeah.
They're stone statues. Granted, the Redskins have played like that for a great portion of their recent history, but that's not what you want.
Yeah. I did like the Red Tails. That was the best.
Red Tails is good. And the other one that was really good, and I thought was, you know, cause it's super local.
Yeah.
is the Go-Go's, but that's already been taken up by, that's a reference to Washington and Virginia music. But that's been taken up by the G League team. The Wizards G League team is the Go-Go's. So that's off the table. War Hogs is terrible.
Yeah, none of those are good.
Tribe is terrible. Red Wolves is terrible. Unless there's a historical reference of it, I'm not getting. I don't like Red Wolves. Veterans is awful. I mean, it's just
We already have like the Nationals and the Capitals.
Right.
The Wizards, like I never understood where that came from. It's just random. Yeah,
that felt to me like they had 15 minutes to come up with a name.
Right.
So very, very similar to how Steve Ballmer comes up with his logos. It's like, guys, let's just do that. We got 20 minutes. I've got other things that I want to do. Give me a logo.
Yeah. There's a different way, but I know those people who do. To me, like the people who buy up domain names, it's not quite as bad as the people who bought up all the hand sanitizer at the beginning of the pandemic, right?
Well, no, it's not that bad.
Not quite, but it is a little like that.
They're the same people.
Yeah,
it's the same people. Let me ask you this, Ramona: how do you compare people who buy up all the domain names and trademark names versus people who steal cable?
Oh well, stealing cable, who's that hurting? I mean, look, I always have paid for my cable, but when I was in college, I may or may not have let some of my, like, the guys who live next door to us use our cable. Like, you could run a line. That's okay. Right?
I think you did it cheerfully, too.
I did. I was not. They asked.
I didn't offer, they asked.
I had
Jessica Mendoza on a couple of weeks ago on our Saturday show. It was right after you guys had the, they rebroadcast that Stanford game.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling a story about how, like, you know, she made that catch in center field and she can't throw the ball into the infield because you're hugging her while gameplay is still happening. And she's like, Ramona, you need to stop. Like, I have to throw the ball now. Like, the level of enthusiasm that she described you playing softball at Stanford was off the charts. And so I'm not surprised you happily allowed people to steal cable from your room.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't love the ask. I was like, ooh, that feels illegal, right? But then I was like, it's not really hurting anybody. It's okay, you know? And then I get to be the kind of like the cool chick, you know, who lets them steal cable. And they were like nice and they were our friends, so it's okay. Hey, Michael Thompson's weighing in with some suggestions for renaming the Redskins. How about the All Federals? Right. The Senators, the Knights.
That's been done. The Knights? Yeah.
The Knights. Where does Knights come from? I like the Federals. That's okay.
That's Federals? Okay.
No?
It's a little like the Nationals.
How about the Washington Revolutionaries?
I guess. Here's the problem. All team nicknames, if you haven't given yourself like 40 years to get used to them,
they all
sound stupid and made up.
Yeah. Like, what's the Vegas one? What did they go?
The Golden Knights.
What?
I don't know. I mean, but in 30 years, it'd be like, oh, yeah, the Vegas Golden Knights. It's fine.
Yeah.
But when they're new, they all sound dumb and made up because they all are kind of dumb and made up.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, Crosstalk's next, right?
Sure is, with Scott Kaplan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's a perfect opportunity for me to tell you that this segment was brought to you by My Computer Career, Training for a Better Life. And this is the part that would be a good time to break so we can get to Crosstalk, right?
Again, yes.
Everyone's on board? Okay, cool. All right, so that's what we'll do. Crosstalk, Ramona, with Scott Kaplan coming up next. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, Sedano Show 710 ESPN. Tell you what, it ain't game day, but you can still feast like it is. Meet Church's new $5 Campfire Smokehouse Chicken, our fan favorite, with a new campfire flavor, plus mashed potatoes and a biscuit. Church's bringing that down-home flavor offer valid at participating locations. I think they mean like kind of a smoky flavor with that campfire. Sounds good. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, filling in for George. Join now for a little crosstalk by Scott Kaplan, who's here with us for his second week. And Scott, I'll put this question to you because my brother and I were talking about it on our weekend show and Ramona and I kicked it around a little bit. If you had to choose today for baseball to be this thing for the rest of its, like, forever, in 162 games, which most people think is too long, or 60 games, which most people think is too short, got to choose one or the other, and that's how it's going to be forever. Which would you take?
60 games. Right away. No yeah. questions.
They didn't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
For me, I've always thought the baseball season was too long. You know, if the Dodgers play the Padres, then, you know, that's an interesting series, at least, you know, for people that are following the NL West or from these markets. But when the Dodgers are playing the Marlins or the Dodgers are playing, say, the Reds, I mean, just teams you just don't care about per se, you're like, yeah, that's three games I'm not really watching or listening to. Here's a four-game series in Miami. There's 11 people in the entire ballpark. Don't need to see that. Without even seeing the 60-game season, I think the notion of a sprint versus the ultra marathon, I'll take the sprint sight unseen.
I don't think there's any question. I was voted for 60 right away. I think, Ramona, you pick 60 if you had to pick one or the other, right?
If I have to pick one of that, and I'm a traditionalist too. I don't really like the DH. I don't like all, but I feel like for the future of baseball, like, it's just too long of a season. I mean, do you watch ultra marathons? Have you ever tuned in for the however long it takes to run an Ironman or an ultra marathon?
Mile six is my favorite of a 400-mile race. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I watch the coverage of the LA Marathon sometimes when it's, but like, I'll watch for about 7 minutes. And then I'll go turn it off and watch something else. And then I'll come back and they're still running. And you're like, okay, what happened? You know, call me when you get close. And then like the last 2 miles are exciting. I just think that's like modern viewing habits. And there is something comforting about there always being a game at the ballpark. There's always another game tomorrow. You know, you could, but I think something around 120 games feels about right. It's just, it's too many games, and it goes forever and ever and ever. And it's just hard to care so much about any individual game when you know there's always one tomorrow.
Let me ask you guys this question. If I said to you golf went from 18 holes to 12 holes, what would you say?
Love it.
Professional, like professionally or for me to play?
No,
like
for me.
The day when I'm, yeah.
Right, like for the average guy, girl who goes out there, it's like 18 holes, you get to like 12. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
I've lost all concentration. I'm on Instagram, and I'd like a burger and a beer. Mm-hmm. Let's go.
I like the ones that, like, I've seen a couple courses like this where they almost divide it into thirds like that, where you can kind of just play, like, you know, you can play a 9, you can play an 18, you can play 12. Like, they have these configurations because it is built, I think, for, I don't know, younger people with shorter, whatever it might be, who just want to play golf for a couple hours but don't want to spend 6 hours doing it. I can't play golf anymore, in part because of that. Like, it's a hard sell. Hey, honey, you stay with the kids. I'm going to go not only spend all of our money, but also be out of the house for 6 hours when you consider travel time to go play golf on a Saturday. That is not an easy thing to sell, but I could do it a little easier if there were only 12 holes.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have our, you know, Brian, you played in that league with Steve Mason, our rotisserie baseball league. And these guys, they have this draft. When you showed up for that draft, how long did you think it was going to be?
I was told it would take like 2 hours.
You were told it would take 2 hours?
I was lied to. Yes.
Wow.
I was told it would take like 2 hours, two or three hours.
That's a bold-faced lie. Because like the first time I showed up, I don't think I asked. I think I just assumed, okay, you know, we're gonna have a draft. Like, I've done these things online before. I've never done it in person. But okay, so I showed up. I had like a family birthday party, and I was like, oh, we have a family birthday party at like 2, but the draft was starting at 8 a.m. I was like, I'll be fine, right? Nope.
I mean, nope.
I had to let them draft the last 5 players on my team.
It was an auction draft.
Auction draft.
And so it's why it took longer. But like, Ramona, I got a text from my wife that basically said, if you're not home in a half hour, I'm leaving you.
Like,
she's like, come home. Like, yeah. I'm tired. Like, this is not about, okay.
You talked about a tough sell playing golf. See, you try and sell it. Like, listen, it's only going to be 2 hours. And honey, listen, this is work. You know, this is very much work for me. I need to be a part of this. And she goes, okay, I got it. All right. And then you're there and it's like 5 hours into it. And it's ridiculous. Ramona, can I ask you a question? Because I heard you talking in the previous segment and you were cracking me up. Did you say that when you were in college, you shared cable with someone next door? So in other words, you allowed someone to splice into your cable and take part of your cable.
I just said, they asked, I was getting cable. They kind of wanted to, it was sort of like one of those, they were probably going to come over to my room and watch the TV if I didn't say yes. Right? Like if I didn't say, yeah, go ahead, splice it. Like it was going to, I was just going to have all these random dudes in my room watching cable all the time if I didn't. But yeah, I wanted to be like cool. I think it was a little peer pressure-y, you know, a little like, oh, I want to be the cool roommate or neighbor or whatever.
Where
but yeah,
I
let them
where,
do
where
it.
Did you go to school? I know, did you play college
Ramona
sports?
Went to Cal.
Yeah, that's
and you
right.
You were an athlete there?
Yeah, Brian, he doesn't know the joke.
I don't know the joke. You'll have to
No, I went
me.
To Stanford.
Oh,
and,
got it.
People
can
see
the
wire.
The time.
Like, you could literally, like, see the wire going from my, like, across the, we didn't hide it. It's not like we built a hole through the wall. I mean, there was just, like, a wire that went from my cable box into their room.
Wow.
It's
I know.
Like, really dumb.
I remember the same thing when I was in college. I went to Pitt. People always joke with me. Apparently, this Cal Stanford thing's a good joke for you. For me, people
yeah.
joke with me and they go, hey, how is Penn State? And so when I was in college, we had one guy on our college football team. You'll know the name because he was the Tony Soprano of NFL football. And that was Tony Siragusa.
Okay.
And I remember going to his apartment one day. And he had this little old lady who lived next door to him. She was this cute little old lady, and she was all by herself, and Big Goose was next door, you know? And so he was going to help take care of her, I guess, in some way, just because he was a friendly, neighborly guy. But let me tell you something. He had her phone line. He had her cable. And when the phone rang, when the phone rang, we'd answer the phone. We'd go, yeah, hello. And then, like, 2 seconds later, you hear this old lady, hello. You know, so, like, he had completely spliced into every utility that she had.
Did she know that?
Sounds like Bergman.
Did she know that he was doing it?
Oh, she knew.
Okay.
She knew, and she was fine. Like I said, I think he sort of played like protector, but he was that kind of a person who would be like, okay, Grandma, I'll make sure you're looked out for, but I'm taking your cable and your phone. You know, that's the way he was, you know?
Yeah. Well, so like I was like the one, how I was like, I'm not living without TV. This is like an essential for me. And a lot of the other people in my dorm, like, they weren't into it. But then, of course, like, they do want to watch something. So, like, there were times when I would come back to my room. And so, and I was trying to be, you know, I was sort of nice about it. I was like, yeah, you guys can come over and watch. That's cool. But, like, I would come home and there would just be, like, somebody in my bedroom watching my TV. Like, literally, like, there was this guy. His name was
David.
Let's just call it. Yeah, his name was David. I don't want to say his last name because maybe this will get back to him.
Say it.
But, like, it starts with an S. And he was really into golf. And so, like, sometimes I would just come home, and in the middle of the day, David would be in my room sitting on my bed, which thankfully I made, watching the Golf Channel. And I'm like, yeah. So when I said you could come over and watch, like, that's not what I meant.
Boundaries, David S.
Boundaries. Like, and it was, I mean, I definitely didn't mind if people wanted to watch shows with me. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of people would come over and we'd watch The Simpsons every night. That was like a show that people in college watch a lot. But like, no, I don't want to come home and find you watching the Golf Channel. So
in my bed made.
Yeah. Like literally sitting on my bed. Mm-hmm. Nope.
No, that's not okay. That's
who
not
is
okay.
This David S?
Yeah. I think he's like in politics now.
Oh,
he does pretty well.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's why I don't want
to
say
I'm going to Google. Over to the Google machine when this
I think
is over.
The fact that he's a public figure makes it all that much more entertaining if we just knew who he was. Who is this guy? You say you went to Stanford, right?
Uh-huh.
What years?
You won't be able to find him. I don't think he is an elected official. Mm-hmm. I think he is a behind the scenes guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He was behind the scenes in your dorm room there on your made bed
watching the
Golf
Channel.
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't respect boundaries. Great interview with Jerry West on Friday, Scott. That was awesome. What's coming up today? What do we got?
What is coming up today? We've got Dodgers manager Dave Roberts stopping by. And later on today, we've got Landon Donovan, who's going to talk about the return of LAFC, the Galaxy, other professional soccer leagues that he's involved with. I don't know if you guys saw this or not. There was a game this weekend between these two teams, Louisville and Pittsburgh. They play in this NSL. And I don't know this minor league. They get offended at this lower level of professional soccer. 4,850 people in the stands.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, whoa, wait a second.
Is that good or bad?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, but isn't it interesting? MLS is bubbled. NBA is bubbled. MLB is going to play in front of nobody, but this lower level league
there
is...
should not be 4,800 people together in any one spot anywhere.
It didn't look like a 60,000 seat stadium to me. So we got a lot to talk about today. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of news.
Very good. All right. So Scott Kaplan coming up at noon. Ramona, we will be back tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday as well. Reminder also tonight on the late night happy hour with me and Andy, 10 o'clock. Sopan Deb from the New York Times covers basketball. Also, spent a lot of time as their culture guy. So we'll do a lot of pop culture, a lot of NBA tonight with Sopan Deb, who's staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning, his time to be on our show, which is to me a little bit crazy, but he's doing it anyway. So that's it. Scott Kaplan coming up next. Brian Kamenetsky, Ramona Shelburne, Sedano Show, 710 ESPN.